69, 215, 110. I'm going down Highway 110 in my big old pickup truck. I'm going down Highway 110 in my big old pickup truck. I'm going down Highway 110 listening to a podcast in my big old pickup truck.
Hey, it's Stever, and welcome to another episode of the 110 Podcast, a podcast where I usually talk about one song in 10 minutes, but this week I have a guest in studio. They just recorded a beautiful song, and we are going to jump into an interview. So here with me today is Madima.
Hi, what's up, 110 Pod? So good to be back.
How are you?
Dude, I'm hot. It's hot. Your clock next to me currently says 92 degrees. And as somebody who's a transplant from Texas, this is something that I grew up with. But ever since being seduced by California good weather, I call BS. This is not cool. This is, in fact, too hot.
Yeah.
And maybe I've become too weak, but I gotta tell you, it's I'm feeling oppressed by the heat. Like, it's a little oppressive.
Trying to keep you cool. We got you in the AC room.
My God, honestly, it's like, I wish that the listeners could see the room right now. It is such a vibe with a Taco's neon sign right next to the AC unit that is blessing me with cold air amidst a sea of records. And then I'm staring at a beautiful sticker by Jedi Jack of a pug in a wrestling mask. It's the best room. And I really, really thank you for having me in it.
I think that just describes like me and Rods. It's just like luchadors, records, music.
Hell yeah.
The AC, tacos, yeah. I wanted to get started with a fun icebreaker.
Okay.
So Exit Plan is out now and it just dropped in August, mm-hmm. your new album. And I just wanted to start with something fun, a fun icebreaker. Mm-hmm. So if Exit Plan was a Filipino dish, what would it be and why?
Ooh, great question. Honestly, it's like I would choose sinigang. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, sinigang is a tamarind-based like broth. Mm-hmm. And it features a lot of different ingredients inside of it. There's many different ways that you can make it, but the tamarind broth is kind of like the standard. And I think of that because it's like a very sour and sweet flavor. And that's exactly how I feel the album really kind of plays itself out. It's a project that focuses largely on like different types of anxiety that I hold all the time and how music has always kind of helped me navigate through that. And also like, in sinigang itself, there's like so many different ingredients like green beans, tomatoes, daikon, mustard greens. The protein for the album, I'd say, is bangos or milkfish. It's like a really hearty fish, but it's mostly like just like a white fish. And it takes on the flavor of almost anything that it's like in.
Yeah.
So I think that this album really speaks to a lot of like, I've had a lot of folks that have texted me after they've listened to it and just being like, hey, this really, like, I related to this project so much and a lot of what you had talked about. So I think that's the beauty of it is that if sinigang with bangos is like a dish that's made for everyone, this album, I feel like, is a project made for anyone who's ever felt uncomfortable in their own skin.
I dig it. I've never had that dish. I'm not even going to attempt to say it, but like I recently, I'm so sad. We got a Filipino spot at the Boulevard down the street in Montebello, and then they closed. I think they had just been open for like a year.
Oh, that sucks.
And I was like, yeah, I was bummed. They're still open and it's white rice. I think they still have a spot in San Diego, but I would get my lumpia there and they had like the best sweet and sour sauce. And what was it? Ube pandasal?
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah,
100%.
With this butter, like ube butter. Oh, it was amazing.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Ube pandasal and then also ube ensamada messes me up in the best way. Like I shouldn't have that much dairy in my life, but I'm gonna.
Yeah. So I want to get into the song. We're going to cut to the song that you just played. Mm-hmm. you played San Sebastian, and I was kind of surprised that you picked that one.
Yeah.
Because on the album, it features Camping.
Yeah.
Also a 110 podcast feature. So, and I love that song, but I was like, ooh, I was like, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be different. Can you just tell us a little bit of why you chose that song?
Yeah. I wanted to bring something in today that folks may or may not have, because the album itself is so like guns a-blazing, arrangement wise, and that's thanks to our music director and arranger Magnum, who's in the band. But I wanted to pull a song that whenever I first wrote the demo for it, like how I just performed it for y'all is basically the audio file that I sent to Camping whenever we were co-writing it together. And there's something that's so much more vulnerable and grounded about this particular song that I think comes more through whenever you just play it with a single voice and a single guitar rather than a full symphony and a choir of voices like you hear it on the record.
Yeah. Yeah. Alrighty. So thank you. We are going to cut into that. that was beautiful.
Thank you.
I loved it. So I have been anticipating this album since February of 2024. 100%. That was when you were on the LPP. And I was like, dang, I was like, that's like over a year.
Yeah.
Of just like waiting, and then you were dropping all these hints and I was getting the emails and stuff. Yeah. So I was like, okay, we're getting closer. But I just wanted to know, like, you touched on it a little bit before, well, about like it being about anxiety, but did you set out with a clear concept or did the songs reveal themselves like as you wrote them?
I think it was the latter. I think that I definitely... It all kind of started with me writing a little bit differently because I started having more of a full band backing behind me. Mm-hmm. I started like writing songs that felt fuller, that felt like they were a little bit more complicated in their construction. And then from there, as far as the content of it, I was noticing that I was writing a lot about like different fears and anxieties that I'd have growing up and even to this day. And that's whenever I started kind of like realizing that each of the things that like the through line between all of these songs was anxiety. Mm. Goon Squad was the first one that was written. And that one was just to like come up with something that's like fun and funky and like just crazy. The first time that we as a band have ever played ska on a record, which is crazy. But yeah, like that was focusing on how much I hate networking. Like I don't like having to put on a mask for people that I'm going to talk to once and then maybe follow up with 2 weeks later and then nothing happens. Mm. I don't like thinking that every single move that I have in an interaction has to be like scripted, because this is not the Truman Show. This is just my life. And then from there, it was just kind of like these songs that were popping up about like, what are some other places in your life that you feel vastly uncomfortable? And a lot of it was stemming from like relationship anxiety, racial anxiety, just like my own mortality. There is all these things that came up and then came together in this little 8-song project that I feel whenever you do end up going through it, you do kind of like hit this arc of like, oh my God, there's so much to be worried about all the time. And then being able to, at the end of the project, trying to ground yourself. And the line in San Sebastian that closes out the album, Ang lahat ay may dahilan, it roughly translates to English to be everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. So both the good and the bad stuff happen regardless of what is going on in your life. So the best way to deal with it is just to keep living. And then eventually you'll figure it out or you don't.
And I think that's a great message. Like I do feel that your album was very, very relatable. I don't know. I guess I'll talk about that more. Like what I felt like after like listening to it, like it was good. It was good. I loved it. I was rocking.
I really hope it was worth the wait. As soon as you said February 2024, I was like, oh boy. It has been a long time.
No worries. It was worth the wait. What has been the biggest challenge and the biggest joy of putting out this album on your own?
Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, cost-wise is just kind of what it comes down to, right? Like finances are just like wild as an independent artist because you are doing it by yourself. You have to like advocate for yourself a lot. You have to be able to be open to negotiating contracts by yourself. I think the beauty of it is that the actual production of it, the actual like arrangements and performance of the record was done with my band. So it felt, that part of it felt like I had so much support. I had very little to worry about. Definitely thanks to Magnum, who is like, you would recognize him in the shows as like our keys player or our sax player. He was so instrumental in creating all the arrangements for both the record and our live performances, as well as like handling all the back end for like mixing and mastering and like delivering everything. That was the joy of it, was being able to have it be such a collaborative project as well, where a lot of my bandmates, like the guitar solo in the original San Sebastian, that was written by Troy, our guitarist, where he like sat with the demo for a long time and then figured out this beautiful, beautiful solo. Definitely like there are parts of the drum patterns that were not only crafted by KP, Our drummer on the project, but also the producer that was our studio producer, Sejo Navajas of 4th Street Recording Studios in Santa Monica. He was really, really great about like giving us these little tidbits, these like extra little like audio morsels to put into our tracks that we would have never have thought of. But yeah, definitely just trying to squeeze an 8-song project in 2 days with like 10 hours of recording on each day, because that's all we had the budget for. It was tight, but we did it. And then everything moving forward, we like finished the rest of like some of the other bits of vocals, primarily in like Pirate Studios over out in West Adams. Like that cut into the budget, not like in a significant amount, because I was very like blessed in having discounts to be able to book the rooms. But yeah, like that was the thing that was always hanging over my head of just like, are we going to be able to afford to put this out? And then once we do, like, how much money do I have to then spend to get like merch for people to then buy at shows? Like, it's always a more of the money aspect that's tougher whenever you're an independent musician. But I was so grateful to have so many folks that have been fans for such a long time, or even just new fans that gave us the money to begin with through the Indiegogo that I launched like last year, I want to say. We raised like over $3,000. And like the only reason why the project happened in the first place was because of donors like you, Deefer, and Rod, and like everybody that contributed. Like I am just eternally grateful that you guys gave me the opportunity to create something like this, because I've never done it before.
I mean, happy to support local artists, you know, you. Here and there, you know. Is there a song on the album that feels most personal to you?
Ooh, yeah. probably the most personal is Farewell. It's the song that precedes San Sebastian on the project. It's funny, I'm talking a lot about the like the slower like songs from the project on the podcast, but like it starts out so big. And a lot of my favorite ones to listen to are like Disaster's my favorite one to like jam out to. Postcard Lover's always a bop. Windswept is like a sneaky, like just a sneaky hit all the time. But yeah, Farewell's the most personal, because that was one that I wrote whenever, this has got a little spooky story vibe to it. So I wrote that whenever I was a sophomore in college. I believe I was 19. And unfortunately, my paternal grandmother had just passed. She was like the matriarch of my dad's family. And we were all pretty much like shooken up because of it. I was planning on trying to get excuses for not being in class like in the following weeks so I could attend the funeral. And while I was kind of in the throes of grief, I was on, I think, like a bus ride home, and I like had my head against the window, and then suddenly I got like struck with this really, really urgent need to write. And I was like immediately ruffled around in my backpack, or not ruffled, I rustled around in my backpack for like a sheet of paper, a tiny nubbin of a pencil. And I was writing and writing and writing. It was the fastest I'd ever written anything. And I wasn't even thinking as I was like going and going. And when I got back to my dorm, it was just me, my guitar, and my little twin bed in the corner. And I was able to figure out chords to this. And whenever I looked, I finally got out of like whatever fugue state I was in, I like looked at the page, and it felt like it was a letter that my grandma had written to me and my family to let us know that she was okay, and that she'd just be waiting up for us whenever we were ready to meet with her again. And it was wild. I had never felt so disconnected from myself whenever I was writing that. It kind of felt like somebody else took over. And like the only other time that I'd ever really performed that song was at her wake. So being able to honor her on this project with that, and then we played the release show on my grandpa's birthday. It was a lot. Like it kind of hit me as I was performing that song actually at the release show, I cried so much. I was very grateful that everybody was very lovely and able to hold me in that moment as I was just like tears streaming down my face as I was like getting through the song. They told me it sounded good, so I'm glad it did, but that one's very, very personal. It's very melancholy, not even melancholy. It really is just so bittersweet. Like it's beautifully arranged. I keep mentioning Magnum because he did such a great job in like figuring out what to do where on each of these tracks. But yeah, this one hit the hardest because it just is dedicated to somebody who means so much to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I understand that. And I believe that it was your grandmother, like, you know, coming through. Like, I've experienced some weird stuff, you know, with my cousins or family passing and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So to paraphrase the last time we chatted on the LPP, you mentioned that you were in school for film, that you went to school for film. Through that, you learned about business marketing and you do all of your content creation yourself with the help of a spreadsheet.
Sure do.
So how do you balance the creative side with the logistics side?
Oh, you know, I'm sure people have like said it. I'm not going to be the first one to say it. I probably won't be the last, but you have to treat yourself like a business. Mm-hmm. The way that I do things with myself is that I give myself like a schedule to work with. In my home office, there's a giant whiteboard that's got like a schedule that's like not super regimented, but pretty regimented of what am I doing throughout that day. And in between all the hours that I have, I have to try to fit in times where I am filming content or planning to write content or just planning like next sorts of like campaigns or things. And in doing so, I am giving myself like a deadline, but then also I give myself such a large amount of time to like work to that deadline in order to play. And I think that's the balance of it, of just like you need to be able to set standards for yourself that are achievable, that you can actually do. And then on top of that are still fun, like things that you can just kind of squeeze into your day that don't feel like it's a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. And in the times that it is a lot of effort, you have more people to help support you in doing the thing. Like the music video for Postcard Lover, that was kind of piecemealed over several different weeks. Between me and some friends that were just handy with like a camera in their hands. And we were able to like put together something that was like a cohesive narrative that was very fun and that was very creative, all within the span of like a month. And having that to play with and also be able to do it is just how I operate. I like having the balance of both, of being able to give myself the time to create something great, and then also like give myself zero limitations on what the creativity is, unless it requires me to pull out a bank statement. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I gotta be realistic with what do I do when I want to do it.
Yeah. Balance is key, like with having fun and everything. And, and yeah.
It's not going to make any sense for you to do it, like anything creative, if you're not having fun. And if you stop having fun, then like try a different way, try something new. Like, there's a reason why you see so many different artists pivot after like an album that they release. I watching like my favorite band that we had talked about last time in the LP pod, Lucius.
Yeah.
They've made so many different pivots on their records over the years that I'm just kind of like, they're just trying to have fun, guys. Like, I'm here for the ride, honestly. Yeah. So it's really, really cool to witness.
Yeah. It's great to see, to like follow a band like for that long, to see all those like different intricacies, I guess.
Yeah.
That you get to notice that. So
100%.
Cool. So if someone were to ask you for advice about releasing their first independent album, what would you tell them?
Ooh, okay. You're releasing your first independent album. You know what? I think a big thing that helped out a lot was also not only just like reaching out in your personal network for folks that can support you in like the funding of it, or just like spreading the word about it, or just giving you really good deals on like studios to record stuff. Mm-hmm. utilize things like SubmitHub or any of these other places, even like College Radio Directory. They are really, really great about telling you which college radio stations are more likely to play local bands' music on like the airwaves. Utilizing those sorts of outlets gains more traction and attention to you and your project ahead of time. Yeah. So I use SubmitHub to kind of get a better gauge on like, what do people like to add to like their playlists and like the curators? And what are people more into just because they like the song construction? I was really surprised whenever Windswept outperformed Postcard Lover. I was just fully convinced that Postcard Lover was like, yeah, this is the radio hit. Like if somebody were to be introduced to this album, this would be the song that they would most likely choose to like listen to over and over again. It was Windswept that did so much better on being added to different curated lists, being recommended, having more write-ups about it, that really threw me. And it makes you kind of more savvy about how you want to make music moving forward to be able to then be put on more playlists, get more listeners, find more traction in that way so that you can have the numbers to back up whenever you approach a venue or you approach like a festival or something. Mm-hmm. Utilizing things like SubmitHub will help you like go further, I think, than just by word of mouth or lovely platforms like these, where you get introduced to like international markets. And that's another thing that kind of bumps up your numbers as well. Like, I had no idea that Windswept would be so popular in Italy, but they love it, apparently. Like, that's where a big part of the listening base outside the United States is. So that's crazy.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's, yeah. I mean, international is like the goal, I guess.
It really is. I don't know what it is, dude, but it was very cool to be like, huh, we're being played in Italy right now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. I guess when I the few times that I've played bands, like not from like the United States, I guess, like they like, how did you find me? I'm like, oh, I don't know. They just like popped up. Sorry. Like the algorithm. Like,
yeah.
Sorry. Like I have no idea. Or Instagram somehow.
For sure.
But yeah, I just always think that's interesting. I get really excited and really sad because I was like, dude, this band is great. I'm going to just shout out my Australian bands. I'm just like, yes. I love those bands.
Yes.
But then it's like, I will never
see them live.
Yeah. Like, damn it.
That's how I feel about Tricot. Tricot's one of my favorite like Japanese bands. And then you go on their website. It's like, ah, yes, they're playing all over Japan. They will never come to the United States. And now because of the current administration like the cost of it happening, I'm like, dog, are we just not going to get anybody from outside of the United States for like the next 3 years?
Oh, yeah.
That blows.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much music, please.
Yeah, that makes me sad.
I know.
you've mentioned this throughout this interview. You had an Indiegogo crowdfund funding campaign for the album. Did you have any other support systems or collaborators that helped you bring your vision to life?
Yes. So actually, Joe Calixto of Apperson helped me and Camping co-write the second track on the album, Kulam. We met on like a very gray day in January of, it's got to be 2023 or 2024. I think 2024. Yeah, that tracks. We were just kind of like swapping notes, and Kulam was kind of like born eventually of just us kind of like talking about how strange it is to be Filipino American and how there's so many things within these cultures that like clash so often and how wildly uncomfortable it is. So Kulam, translated from Tagalog into English, it means curse, and it also happens to reference a term in the Philippines whenever there's like a rash that breaks out on folks that typically suffer from anxiety. And it's just kind of like the way that I felt about it being a quarter white is there is this curse that like is underneath my skin of just like the bad parts of history, like all the bad things that have ever happened, mostly traced to white people. So like, having to come to terms with like my own guilt within myself and the world around me has been something that's been like weird to navigate. But it was so cool to be in a writing session with those two guys that even though they're not, they have no white in their like DNA, they helped me find the right words to say what I was feeling whenever I wasn't able to elucidate that myself. Mm-hmm. And then I had mentioned like so many people so far, like Magnum, again, like could not have been more essential to the project. We had Quinn J play trumpets on Goon Squad. Quinn J, if some of you are not familiar, he is an incredible rapper and instrumentalist based here in California, originally from Philly. You can also find him on Netflix's Rhythm and Flow season 2. He's nice. Like featured on there. And I lost my mind when I saw Quinn and I was like, I have somebody that was on a Netflix competition show on my album, which is nuts. Alyssa Aguilos is also very prominently featured across like almost every track of the project as the backing vocalist for the album. She and I sing together so well and we have like great stage chemistry. So it's always awesome to have Alyssa involved in anything. Ellie Ann is a violinist that Magnum knows from school, and she's killer, dude. She tours regularly, as well as is kind of like a studio musician by trade. She's gearing up for like wedding season right now because people love to have the strings.
Mm-hmm.
But Ellie is so dope, dude. Like she's crazy, crazy good. He wasn't on the album, but he did support the release show in such a big way. And if we were like going on tour, he would definitely be the first person that I call to play bass. His name's Dan. He's awesome. He's a part of this other band, Neon Pacific, that our guitarist Troy is also from. So having them be able to like play off each other is always a good time. If we're also referencing people that played the release show, Ephraim Ali, he is from... also, I think like a different kind of like horns collective that Magnum knows of in the OC. He's so dope. He's so incredibly professional and also just like a really, really fun hang. All of these people had such an instrumental and impactful role in making this project what it was, not only in the studio, but on stage, that I don't think that any of it would have been possible had their brains not been in the room. I can only take something so far, but being able to like bounce ideas off of other musicians and creatives really gives me a greater scope in creating something that's really going to blow people's minds. And I love working with them.
Nice. That's a lot of people. I just think it's so beautiful that like you've met all those people and then how that all like came together. I'm releasing an EP. It should be out by the time this comes out.
Oh my God. Okay. Very cool.
And this time I actually collaborated with a couple people. I mean, just like very close friends.
Yes.
So C-Flow does backing vocals and Caesar of Eastside Agents does some trumpet on there.
Hell yeah.
And it was just like a different like experience to see how their brains work, like while they were sitting where you were sitting, like I'm trying to work out like whatever isn't going to be in the background of like this song and however Rod's going to mix it because it's all DIY. But yeah, it was definitely like a different experience. So I can't imagine like getting to that level where you're at, where you have like all these people, like you're just collaborating with like all these people. So I just think that's really beautiful and like and amazing. So
thank you. I'm excited for your EP now. I'm so psyched. I can't wait to hear the project.
Thanks. What do you hope someone feels after listening to the album all the way through?
Definitely catharsis, I think, is the operative word here. It's every time I listen to the project back, just like whenever I was just we were finally done, we had all the masters locked in, I felt at least like some sort of modicum of catharsis with how difficult all the emotions that I had put into it became packaged in such a way that it made me understand myself better. And I really hope that other people that feel like they can really relate to the project feel that as well. I want them to be able to let the lyrics kind of like sit with them for a little while. And then if they're trying to work through something that's really difficult, that this project can help them find clarity, help them find sort of like a settling in their soul about how like unpredictable and tough life can be. But it also, it's kind of a miracle that any of us are here. Mm-hmm. So really, catharsis is kind of just kind of like the thing that I just keep coming back to, of just, I want somebody who happens to be going through like a hard time get to like thrash out at the top of the album. And then whenever mm-hmm. they like run out of breath, they can just like lay down on their living room floor and let the final like back half of the album wash over them, and then bring them back to center and keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I feel like that was a similar experience, like listening to the album. I was trying to relate it to food because, you know, that's where I
yes, 100%.
So I was like, I think it starts out very spicy. Like Goon Squad was my favorite because I like more of the rockin' stuff.
For sure.
But then like it just flows and like it settles in. Like, you know, the spiciness just like dims. It's not like overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then you just feel like really satisfied by the end. And I think it was taking into consideration that like I've been waiting for this like for
yeah,
so long. So I
for
was
sure.
like, yes. And then I was like, ooh, I was like, okay. And then I was like, calm down. And then I was like, yeah, that was really good.
I love, oh God, that's the best analogy. It's just like, it was a very spicy project. And then I was so full at the end. Yeah.
So before we get to the end of this podcast, I wanted to see, where do you see your music headed next?
Oh man, I don't know how long it's going to take for the next one, if I'm being honest. The last one took a very long time. Mm-hmm. With everything that's been going on, I have been writing a ton of like politically forward things. Yeah. And I have the title for it in my head. I'm calling it Some City on a Hill, to kind of like jab at like that sort of the mindset that America used to be seen as kind of like the pinnacle of society. It was often referred to, I think it was Reagan that would say often, like, America, the city on a hill, the golden child of the Western world or something. And given everything that's been going on and where we find ourselves, I was very much just like, no, that's not at all what we are, guys. We have a whole litany of problems, and I'm going to tell you about it all here. And it's probably going to be the longest project I've ever written. I'm looking at like 12 songs.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Like a full like real album. Whether or not I actually am able to like go into a studio to do it, or if I just kind of like go sort of like old school with it, where it's just mm-hmm. kind of like mostly just guitar and like far less like orchestration than what Exit Plan had. But I don't know. I think that, like, for example, the song that we played at the release show that I've gotten many people telling me, like, okay, I think this is the one. I think this is your breakout song mm-hmm. because it's affected so many people. It's very, like, timely. It's called Vipers. I wrote it after Inauguration Day, like hours mm-hmm. after the inauguration happened. And yeah. I was like, I have all this rage that I can't possibly contain. I gotta put it somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was a song that's really talking about how it's not so much the person that is ruining American democracy. It's the system that we mm-hmm. have decided to allow this to happen and keep happening. So being able to recognize that and recognize who the real enemy is to the greater whole of society. Like the hook of it is "Don't Tread on Me," very famously from the Gadsden flag, originally from Texas, talking about like to a tyrannical government of just saying, you don't get to infringe upon my rights and what I am entitled to as a human being. I feel like a lot of people are feeling that right now, especially in LA because of ICE. Mm-hmm. Also, Producer Rod, I'm sorry if you have to censor me, but fuck ICE. Everyone has to say it, and we all gleefully say it because they have no right being in this city.
Yeah.
It's that kind of energy, sort of like that revolutionary energy that's really spearheading this next phase of my music, mm-hmm. where I want to speak truth to power And if all of the projects that I've had thus far were about my vulnerability, like sunspots with all of my vulnerability within my relationship to my birth mother, exit plan, everything to do with like all of my faults that I know that I have because of my anxiety, now I want to look outward as just being like, this is not okay. And we all need to start doing something to stop this from happening.
Yes.
And that's the kind of energy that I want to bring into this next phase of my songwriting and just musicianship, of just like really connecting to people at that base level of like, okay, we're upset, I get that. So what are we going to do about it actually? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to getting a lot of angry messages in my Instagram moving forward. Who's to say how angry everyone will get? I don't care at this point.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard of the artist Carsey Blanton?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that energy.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I hope. I hear more of that soon. So
Can't wait. Truly can't wait.
But I wanted to thank you for, coming down to the studio, quote studio.
Hey, dude, there's a carpet that's in front of us where I was like, it's giving studio. And the talk, again, I cannot like heap more praise upon the tacos neon sign. It's a whole vibe in here, and I'm just very grateful that you asked me to come in.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh yeah, get the sign, Rod. Shout out to Letty for the taco sign. That was like my birthday present from last year.
Hell yeah.
But thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Socials will be in the show notes, but okay. If you want to give out your socials.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody can find me at madima.mp3. That's madima.mp3 on wherever you follow social media. I decided I'm going to start up my TikTok again now that we have this really dope footage from the release show to plug. You can also find me at my website, www.madima-mp3.com. Keep a lookout to see if we might be playing in your area. We actually are going to do an unofficial South by Southwest show in the spring. So any of my Texas homies, if you happen to be listening to the pod, which I probably sent you, tell me if you want me to come with the band to play in your town. Be really, really psyched to see you.
Awesome. And don't forget to check out Exit Plan streaming everywhere.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Deaver. And you, Producer Rod.